Good afternoon, everyone. This is Bill Sisson at the Mobile Area Chamber of Commerce. We are waiting for Senator Jones to join the call. As soon as he joins the call, we will get started.
I'm here.
There you are. Good afternoon, Senator Jones.
How
are
you doing?
Thank you so much for joining us. Good afternoon, everyone. Again, this is Bill Sisson, President of the Mobile Area Chamber of Commerce, and I want to thank each of you who has called in today for taking the time to join us. The Chamber knows that you're all suffering personally and economically right now because of the effects of COVID-19, and we want to continue to be a resource for you, a response team, during these unprecedented times. We have a very special guest this afternoon, U.S. Senator Bud Jones, and I will introduce him in just a moment. Please remember that this is a muted call so that background noise can be eliminated. There will be an audio recording of today's call, so you can go to the Chamber's website, mobilechamber.com, to download later. And we encourage you to, of course, share that with those who could not be on the call today. We collected questions for the Senator ahead of time by email, and if time permits, I will ask those of Senator Jones until we run out of time today. Senator Jones, we want to sincerely thank you for spending this time with us today, and we want you to know how much we appreciate your service to the state, especially during these trying times. It is certainly a pleasure to introduce Senator Doug Jones, who was born in Fairfield, Alabama, near Birmingham. He found a love for politics and organizing through his volunteer work with Campus Affairs at the University of Alabama, and in a statewide campaign to modernize Alabama's court system. After graduating from Cumberland School of Law at Stanford University in Homewood, he worked as staff counsel to the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee for Senator Howell Heflin. And following his stint in D.C., Senator Jones served as an assistant United States attorney and then went into private practice in Birmingham until he was nominated to the position of U.S. Attorney for the Northern District of Alabama. He served as U.S. Attorney until June of 2001. Senator Jones successfully prosecuted two of the four men responsible for the 1963 bombing of the 16th Street Baptist Church, finally bringing full justice and closure nearly 40 years after that attack that killed four young girls. Senator Jones was elected to the U.S. Senate in a special election in December of 2017, as all of our callers will know well. He serves on the Banking, Housing, and Urban Affairs Committee, the Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee, the Armed Services Committee, and the Senate Special Committee on Aging. Senator Jones, I would like to turn it over to you, and again, thank you for being with us this afternoon.
Well, thanks so much for having me. I appreciate this very, very much, an opportunity to talk to folks and to hear your questions or comments. I don't want to spend a lot of time in my comments initially, but I would like to kind of give you where we are and where I think Congress is going. First of all, when I do these, I do like to remind people how significant and how quickly this virus has taken hold of this country. I tell the story of, I was March the 7th, it was a Saturday, just 5 weeks ago, that I'm traveling back from Gunnersville for the Bassmaster Classic back to Birmingham, and on the phone with my staff Saturday afternoon, and the United States at that point had just topped 400 cases. Just 400 cases, and now we're about to top, if we haven't already, and I haven't checked the statistics, in that five-week period, 700,000. We have been hit harder than any country in the world. In Alabama, the first case was uncovered or detected on March the 13th, and in that time now we have well over 4,000. And within, I think, by the end of the weekend, we're likely to top over 5,000 cases with any number of deaths. Obviously, we've had a concern about Mobile and the way Mobile has grown in their numbers over the last month. So the point is that this is an incredibly serious virus. And the fact is it spreads very, very quickly, spreads easily, and it is, and it can be deadly. This is not a cold. It is not the flu. In fact, it spreads more rapidly than anything we've seen recently and is more deadly, much more deadly than the flu or colds. And so we have to take a recognition of that. That's number one. Number two is that we have passed three bills so far in the United States Congress that all three passed overwhelmingly, which I think is a testament to how you can really get some things done in a crisis and people come together. The first bill that we passed was an $8.3 billion emergency bill. It was designed as much as anything to start the process of getting a vaccine research going, to get to stop the spread as best we can by getting more equipment, getting health and research, and trying to develop vaccines and testing kits and getting those to local communities. Unfortunately, we are still way behind the curve in testing in this country, which is something we might can talk about a little bit later. In addition, after that, we passed the second COVID package. That bill increased Medicaid reimbursements for states by about 6%, 6.2% of the what they call the FMAP, the federal medical assistance percentage, was increased so that states could better handle those that have Medicaid. We could get more dollars coming in for that care. It increased unemployment aid, giving resources and flexibility for unemployment benefits. This is in the second package. And also did some paid sick leave and medical leave. There was a number of food assistance programs that were also included. The big package, of course, was the $2 trillion package known as the CARES Act. And that is the largest single financial package that Congress has ever done. It surpassed our appropriations for this past year. Our discretionary appropriations was only about $1.3 trillion. This was over $2 trillion. Came together, again, in a bipartisan fashion because I've said this so many times. We all have the same goals. We all have the same objectives. We just have a little bit different ways of getting there. You all know that it gave money, $350 billion for small businesses that we need to replenish. It gave money to larger businesses, airlines, and others. It gave money, $133 billion, to hospitals. 33 of that was supposed to be used for specifically for the COVID crisis, while $100 billion was to try to help cover other costs that they were losing. All of our hospitals are losing. They are just literally hemorrhaging money because they did the right thing. Even if they didn't have a lot of COVID patients, they shut down elective procedures. They were not seeing as many routine patients as it would come in for general health care, which has cost them a ton of money. So it was helped backfill that. We increased unemployment benefits by extending for 4 months and giving an extra $600 a week for unemployment benefits. And the $350 billion, we had an emergency loan program for businesses. We also had, as part of the $350 billion, the Payroll Protection Plan, which was administered through the SBA, which has been a very, very difficult rollout. Problems with that that were being worked out before it ran out of money. It ran out of money this week, and we're working hard to try to get more money in there. You probably all either experienced those problems or you've heard about those problems, so I want to go into those in great detail. What we're trying to do is to help remedy some of the problems that we've seen. This was a loan program, initially the Payroll Protection Plan, was a loan program, and so administered by the banks. And so the banks are going through what you would expect banks to do in their normal course of business, which is, you know, their due diligence and their underwriting to make sure that the money goes out in the way, even though the Payroll Protection Plan, if it worked as designed with each company, was essentially going to be a grant. That's exactly what it was supposed to be. If everybody complied, it was going to be a grant money for the payroll. That has been a tough rollout, and that has prompted what we are looking at. I see at least two more packages coming down the road relatively soon, the first one sooner than the later one, and we may have to do more after that. The one that is being discussed now to try to get in the very, very near future, I'd hope to see it next week, but I don't know if we can make it next week, is something that will, one, it will put more money in the small business fund. It will also change some of the language and some of the deadlines that I think are that we now know are really not feasible. You know, there's a June 30th deadline. There's a deadline of an 8 weeks that you've got to spend a certain percentage of the money. I really don't think that those parameters are feasible as we know things now and as we're trying to get the economy open back up on a rolling basis. There's a lot of tweaks to that program that we're going to have to look at that we're trying to change before we just put another, what I'm hearing, $250 billion is the figure that most people are talking about putting into the small businesses. But we do have to put more money in hospitals. There is no question about that. That has to be done. Our hospitals are beginning to feel the pinch like no other, and it's not just because of a surge in people. They are overwhelmed because they are losing so much money right now. The big hospitals, the little hospitals, they are all going to lose a tremendous amount of money, and we want to make sure they stay open. We want to make sure that they are able to pay their employees that are on the front lines of dealing with this virus. The third thing that we're looking at is to try to get some help for state and local governments. There was a $150 billion pot in the CARES Act, but unfortunately, it could not be used to backfill for payroll and things like that. It could only be used for COVID-related expenses that had not been budgeted. And I hope I didn't get popped off there.
You're still
am
on.
Am I still on? Okay,
yes,
good. I heard a weird noise. So, unfortunately for state and locals, they couldn't use it for their ongoing essential expenses. Our state and local governments, particularly our local governments, have been, you know, forced to deal with a tremendous loss in revenue while they are still providing those essential services like fire and police and sanitation. And I'm hoping that, you know, the CARES Act specifically would not allow cities to use that money that way. I'm hoping that in this round that's coming up first in the next week to 10 days, hopefully week to 10 days, we'll do that. There's a lot of discussions going on about that right now. Down the road, we're looking at another big package. I think everyone recognizes now that this crisis had more impact than what was originally thought. It has had a deeper impact, and it is going to last longer in the sense that if you follow the data and you follow the science, we're not going to be able to light up the economy like we would light a Christmas tree. We're going to have to do this in a carefully basis following healthcare and data. That is going to mean we're going to open up slowly, and it's going to be different sectors that are going to open up, maybe different parts of the state, maybe different parts of the country. But because of that, you're going to have to be cognizant of the fact that the federal government is going to have to provide those cushions for businesses, for cities, for hospitals, for individuals as this thing progresses a little bit longer, and hopefully not too much longer, but certainly longer than we anticipated. Today, there were two things that I'm pushing on, and I will just tell you about those real quickly before we open them up. Today, I rolled out a program with some of my colleagues, particularly Senator Warner, Senator Sanders, Senator Durbin, and Blumenthal, on a Paycheck Security Act, recognizing that people are going to be unemployed for a fair length of time. We are not going to get back to the 2.5 or 2.9% unemployment that Alabama was fortunate enough to see as in January and February. We're not going to get back to that anytime soon. So more people are going to be unemployed. We want to provide that cushion with a program that will bypass the banks and go straight from a treasury, potentially using payroll processing companies to help distribute money for people that make up to $90,000. And then these companies will wean off of that as they get back up and they get be profitable. That's a very short version of that. The other thing that I'll be candid about, and I've spoken to you guys about this before, I think right now this crisis has shown a spotlight on the health disparities across the country, but particularly in the South and in Alabama. And I think we should, in the federal government, do what we can to give states like Alabama that have not expanded Medicaid the incentives to do that. We are putting money in hospitals. We are putting federal dollars in hospitals. What we need to be also doing is putting federal monies to healthcare providers that actually providing treatment. The one thing that we now know, two things actually. One, as the healthcare system is going to be overburdened for some time, we won't see the surge in COVID patients, but as we open back up, the pent-up demand that has been there and will be there is going to put our healthcare system at a strain. And we need to, in Alabama, have as many federal dollars coming in as possible to help prop that up, keep that healthcare in these rural areas, and keep those hospitals open. The final thing I would say about Medicaid expansion, and I think this is probably a really important point. This pandemic has really put a magnifying glass on the fact that our health care individually and collectively depends on each other. The health of my neighbors helps, you know, my health is dependent on my neighbor's health, and my neighbor's health is dependent on my health. And the more we can do to lift the health care in Alabama and to get Alabama to be a healthier state will have far outweigh the short-term economic pain, and if I can get the incentives, it wouldn't even be that. But the fact is we need to up the health care outcomes in Alabama and bring those dollars in that we're talking about close to $1 billion a year if Alabama would expand Medicaid and help shore up those communities. So with that, I probably went a little longer than I'd planned, but I just get rolling on these things. There's a lot going on. I will tell you that even though we are all working remotely, my schedule is just brutal. We go from daylight till dark on Zoom calls, conference calls, emails. Everybody is talking to each other, working to try to get this stuff out, because our goal is to have packages that can once again get the overwhelming support. The CARES package passed the U.S. Senate 96-0. It would have passed 100-0, but we have four of our colleagues in quarantine. The goal is to keep that kind of legislation coming, and that's what gets everybody working day in and day out. So with that, I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you a few minutes, and I'm happy to try and answer a few of your questions or just take a few comments that I can take back to our staff. So thank you very much.
All right. Senator, thank you so much for that, and we certainly appreciate all your efforts. A lot of the questions that were emailed in ahead of time had to do with the additional federal stimulus packages in the coming weeks, and you've covered those in really good detail. Some of them went into a little bit more detail, and so I'll ask those in just a moment. But I'll start with one question that was sent in. It said that individual governors will make the decision on reopening of businesses based upon their individual situation. What do you envision as the potential economic reopening of the state and the procedures specifically maybe related to Mobile?
Well, you know, I'm going to give you my personal opinion because, in my opinion, may be a little bit more aggressive about the health care than some in the state. I have consistently done that, and I've been trying to, as in between a bunch of things today, go through the top lines of Lieutenant Governor Ainsworth's report to the governor and the recommendation. As I understand it from a report I got a few minutes ago just before I came on, Governor Ivey wants to hold off just a little bit, another 14 days or so, to make sure we've got our case count starting to decline. We're not seeing that yet. We're still on the rise, and every model that we've seen shows that we're still on the rise. And so as long as we are seeing more cases, then I think we have to be very, very, very careful in trying to do anything to relax the standards. We have to remember that, first of all, social distancing and hygiene, those are the only tools that we have to effectively fight this virus. There is no vaccine. There is no treatment. You just have to do everything you can when somebody gets infected to try to make them comfortable and to try to hope that you can do those kind of things to save their life if they get really serious. But there is no vaccine. There is no treatment. This virus, There is not a human being on this planet who had a single iota of immunity to this virus. It is brand new. And so I think until we see the decline, we have to be extremely careful. In looking at the plan, I think there are a number of things that folks can do at the appropriate time to start reopening the restaurants, to start reopening other stores, and to slowly get things, these things going. I will say, in my view, that this has to be driven by the healthcare data. The one thing that is not listed, at least I haven't seen in the Lieutenant Governor's plan, and this is no fault of his because, unfortunately, it's something that we don't have. We have got to figure out how to get the testing. I am worried very much that there are a lot more cases in Alabama than are being tested. I'm worried that there are a lot more people dying, and it's being chalked up to natural causes that are dying from this virus because we don't have the testing or the capabilities to get to those folks. Testing is a huge problem, folks. It's a problem in Alabama. If you go on the website, you will see that there are so many of our counties that have had just a handful, 50, 60 case tests done in those counties. We've got to get more testing, and that is not just for people that have the symptoms and have the virus. We are working, and I was on a call today with some colleagues and the vice president, along with Dr. Fauci and Dr. Hahn with CDC and Seema Verma from CMS. We've got to start ramping up the serology test, the blood test, and so that we can do the contact tracing that's going to be necessary. If we don't have that and we open up too fast and people let their guard down, and that's my biggest concern, that if we send mixed messages, people will let their guard down, they'll quit wearing masks, they'll go out, they'll just think it's business as usual. We'll see protests in Montgomery like they're seeing in other places about personal liberties, which are just crazy in my view. If we see a surge next fall or in January of next year, we cannot take a double punch to our economy in this country. We will be in such a vulnerable position. So we have to be very careful. I think the Lieutenant Governor's things, as I've seen, are pretty good if they are rolled out in a carefully planned way based on the data. That seems to be what I heard the Governor say.
Interestingly, Senator, our surveying of our businesses has shown that that's a top concern. Testing is incredibly important to the return to work phase for all of our businesses. So, point well taken, certainly. Another question that came in, the PPP, the Paycheck Protection Program, is specifically not available for 501c4 organizations. The Downtown District Management Corporation, which is tasked with providing clean and safe services, economic development, and marketing for downtown's revitalization efforts, is a 501c4 that supports the payroll for 20 full-time employees. Is there going to be a fix for these organizations? And I'll pop in and say, as you know, Senator, C6s are not included either with
right.
the Chambers of Commerce across the country. So any comment on that, please?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I got almost that exact same question when I did the Montgomery Chamber of Commerce call this morning. In my view, it is a fix that is needed. I support it. I supported it the last time. I don't know the answer as to whether or not it will get included, but I will tell you it's a priority of mine. I think we have to do this across the board. You know, there has been some justification saying that we are giving not only some payroll protection and other loans and benefits for businesses, we're also giving them some extended tax breaks that would help them make the contributions into the chamber and other areas. I just don't think that that's going to cut it personally. I think that we need to find the help for everybody. Everybody's going to be hurting across the board. We've gotten some pushback on that. Believe it or not, I'm getting pushback with some of my colleagues on the other side of the aisle about trying to help state and local governments and their loss of revenue. And I don't understand it. We're helping businesses and we're helping everybody with loss of revenue, and we need to be helping. If we're going to help one group, we ought not be just picking winners and losers. We need to help everybody that we can. That's what I think we're there for. So So I'm with you. I'm going to push for it. I just can't promise you that that fix will get in this package or the next one, but I'll keep trying.
Well, we appreciate your support on that. Certainly, downtown organizations and chambers of commerce are going to be very much needed in the restart efforts that are taking place, hopefully sooner rather than
Absolutely.
Later. So,
Absolutely.
So thank you for that. We had a question, again, it relates to the stimulus packages. We would appreciate some insight, the question says, on what may be the next round of stimulus funding for businesses with more than 500 employees, the larger employers.
Yeah, that is going to be part of the second package. If we do the first one, it's going to be more for the smaller businesses. The second package right now, I think that is a work in progress. I will tell you that the plan that we've got, and I can try to get to you, there'll be a white paper that we have on the Paycheck Security Act. It does not reference a business size. It could be for all businesses, for their employees that make $90,000 or less. And we did that for that reason, because we know that there are businesses that have fallen through the cracks some in this. And the biggest expense for so many of them is their payroll. So I'm hoping that we can get enough support with not only our colleagues, but we can get enough support with chambers and businesses across the country to look at this. It is going to be a big program, and make no mistake, it's going to be an expensive program. But the fact is, it would help all businesses, small businesses up to the larger businesses that show a significant loss of revenue, which I think is probably going to be just about every business in the country. So I think there are going to be some variations of that type of plan that we're going to be looking for the larger companies down the road. I think the other thing that is going to need to be replenished, there's going to need to be another disaster loan fund out there. The one that was passed in the CARES Act, it got gobbled up even quicker than the Payroll Protection Act. So we've got to look at that now, and we see now how serious this is, and I think Congress will give a quick look at that. So I feel like there's going to be something in that second package, which I'm hoping that we'll be able to hammer out in early May, but I don't see it coming in the package that I'm hoping that I think we're trying to get out in the next week to 10 days. And Bill, I'll send you that white paper on the plan that we've got, because I'd love to get some feedback from folks about it.
We'll be happy to distribute that and get that feedback for you. I think we have time for one more question, which is about child care providers. The question is, funding, of course, is needed to sanitize the facilities, test employees and children before allowing them to participate in child care activities. Is there a plan for additional funding related specifically to child care providers?
Yes, there will be. That is a real, you know, the child care issue is something that has kind of been falling on the back burner, that when people talk about getting their businesses open back up and getting Alabama and the country open back up, they forget how many people have children at home now that they are homeschooling, that are going to remain home at least, you know, for now throughout the summer. And we've got to, in order to get people back to work, we've also got to deal with child care. And there is a concerted effort, I think. I can't give you a lot of details. I just know in my conversations with people, there is a group of colleagues that are working to try to get to make sure child care facilities are taken care of, both within the businesses and independently, so that as people move back in the workforce, those children can be taken care of and taken care of safely and healthy. But because the one thing that I think has come through, and that is why doing this on a gradual basis is so important, we now see that 25 to 30% of the population can have this virus, be asymptomatic, have no fever, no real signs of a cough or a cold or anything, and still have this virus that they can spread to others. That's why we wear masks. I keep explaining to folks that when you wear a mask out in public, you're not trying to just protect yourself. You're trying to protect others. And I've been doing that. I will let you guys know, and I would encourage, I said the same thing to the Montgomery Chamber and their leaders today. Until we get comfortable that this virus is spread, I would encourage folks when you're out to wear a mask. And when the few times I've gone out, I wear a mask because I've thought it was very important that people see their United States Senator taking this serious and wearing a mask. And I'm going to continue to do that for a period of time. We'll see how that goes. But obviously child care is a huge, huge component of trying to get our workforce back in place.
Thank you so much. We are out of time. Senator Jones, thank you so much for spending this time with us today. Remember, callers, that this session was recorded and will be posted on the Chamber's social media channels and on our website. Again, thank you for being with us, Senator Jones, and thank all of you who are on the call. Please know that we appreciate your membership in the Mobile Area Chamber of Commerce. Have a wonderful weekend, everyone.
Thank you.